Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live. It's Monday, November 10th. Happy birthday, United States Marine Corps, 239 years young and still killing the enemy all over the world. Welcome to the show, my co-host, Kristen Buzinski from WYLN-TV in Hazleton. Well, Kristen, ever since you've been coming on board, we've been having a fun chase to watch.
We certainly have, Vince. And real quick, a happy belated birthday. I know I said it the other day, but to all of our listeners, Vince had a birthday over the weekend, so I hope it was a wonderful day for you.
It was. I got to sit around and watch a race all day and basically do nothing.
That's always good. You can't complain when you get to do nothing.
I turned a whopping young age of 56. If you can believe that from my pictures. I don't feel my age.
You don't look a day over, I'd say, 35.
You're just being kind.
That's my age, so I figured I was safe with saying that.
Well, you could, if you didn't know, what would be your honest guess, if I didn't just blurt it out?
I would have definitely said, like, maybe late 40s. I wouldn't have definitely wouldn't have said you were 56 by any means.
Well, I'll take that. That's good enough. Late 40s, you know.
Yeah, why not? I mean, those are the fun years. I'm looking forward to those years. The older I get, the more exciting things get in life. Got to be honest.
Yeah. But, you know, that's true, because then, you know, you seem to want to care less about things. It's like, well, you want to do that? Sure, why not? I don't care.
Right. But, no, I'm glad you had a great birthday and you had a good race to watch on that birthday of yours, because, boy, it was exciting right down to the last second.
Well, kudos have to go out to you for picking the winner last week.
Good. How about that?
Even though we both thought up the same thing, which is getting kind of scary anymore, that we're thinking the same things at the same time.
No, it's crazy. It's like we're on the same wavelength, Vince. It's getting a little scary.
But it's all in good fun, because I had picked your boy Brad to win the race, and he just didn't have the car to get it.
No, he really didn't.
Would have been interesting to watch if he could have caught the back end of Harvick's bumper after the shenanigans Harvick pulled on pit road last week.
Right. I had a couple of people, you know, friends texting me during the race, knowing I'm a Brad K fan, saying, you know, wouldn't it be crazy if Brad worked his way up there and it was Brad and Harvick, and, you know, little payback tap came about and, you know, Brad won the race. It would be very coincidental and kind of fun to watch. And I was like, yeah, and I think you and I even said it to each other through text watching the race. We didn't have that chance to make that happen because, yeah, Brad's car just really didn't have the power on Sunday, as you've seen in weeks past with his cars. I feel his restarts weren't Brad restarts. I mean, he's pretty good at restarts, and his cars usually have a lot of power, and he can kind of, you know, get right up there on those restarts, but he just didn't have it this week.
Nah, and, you know, strategy comes into play, too, so even though they might have strategized getting, you know, staying in the top 10, you know, as long as you're close enough on a restart to where you have a chance to catch the, you know, going into the first lap after taking the green on the restart, you have a chance of passing the guy. And it looked like, from what I saw yesterday, that the inside line was the one to take. And you figure you want to at least restart in the third spot or the fifth spot, so you have that inside line. So when the leader takes the green and he shoots out there, they could always push ahead of him and then try to get around him. But it didn't seem to be the case.
Right.
This past weekend.
No, not at all.
And Harvick leading three times for 264 out of 312 laps. He kind of put a stamp on it there, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, absolutely. And you honestly, you couldn't argue with Harvick's car, his team, him as a driver on Sunday. He just was right on. I mean, he was near perfect from the start. And, he quite frankly deserved to win that race. Some unfortunate events behind him. I mean, I don't even think you can call him unfortunate. But, the coincidence that here Jeff Gordon's knocked out of the race by what Newman did to Larson, which is kind of almost the same kind of little twist that happened the week before involving Gordon and Keselowski. It's just kind of an interesting way that it all came about.
Yeah, but Larson wasn't in the chase at all, and Newman was, so it's not like he bumped a chase guy out to bump, to knock a chase guy out. Larson, to his credit, from what I've seen reading online, that, he was okay with it. It was racing. He understood he'd probably do the same thing and put in that position. Way back when they ran, they had the Winston Million competition where you had to win three of the four crown jewels. It was Jeff Burton and Jeff Gordon at Darlington. And for $1 million, Gordon needed the win to get the million. And Jeff Burton would have won the race, but he wasn't involved in the big payoff thing. So Gordon went up, bumped him over. Didn't wreck him, but just knocked him loose and got around him for, when money's on the line and these guys smell it, that's going to kind of happen. So.
Yeah. And, as we talked about and many other people said and sort of backed him up on it, the week before the whole Keselowski-Gordon thing, it really maybe it wasn't an intentional, I'm going to knock Gordon out of here. Brad saw the hole and was going to take it. What happened after that is what it is. But, you're right with Newman. I mean, Larson wasn't necessarily racing, for the chase. Well, he wasn't. Newman was. He saw that as an opportunity to be that fourth car, and he took it.
I mean, he might not have, from what the replay shows, he went down low to get around Larson, and when he came up, he caught him. And, sometimes you clear him, sometimes you don't. That time it just happened to work. Had Newman been, we'll say, maybe a foot shorter than where he was when he came up, they both might have wrecked, and Gordon might have went on to make the chase. Because I saw some comments online about how could a guy like Newman, who hasn't won a race, still be in, and Gordon, who had a few wins this year, be bumped out. And one of the comments was, well, it should be whoever gets the most points wins, but that's the reason why we had the chase, because you used to get people get such a big lead in points when they used to go from Daytona to the end of the season, back when, I think, before Homestead was in the picture, might have still been Atlanta. And, in a big lead going into the last couple races, you might lose a few points, because then you start points racing. Well, I got to finish the head here, so I'll hang back. Then you wind up getting in a wreck and losing a few more than you bargained for, but still, it made for a boring season.
Right.
And then they had so that's when they came out with the chase format, and then it seemed to be working in one driver's favor, which happened to be Jimmy Johnson winning 6 out of 12 championships since he's been in, because I think the chase format just started, but he was in maybe a year or two before. Of course, that's when they used to, it was back when it was the old Nextel Cup days.
Right.
So I look at it this way, and you can tell me if you think the same thing, or you have two guys in the final round that have won a lot this year, Harvick and Logano. Logano got 5 wins. If you're including one of the chase wins, you could, still even the few he had before the chase. And then Gordon and Harvick's got four wins. Then you have Hamlin, who's got one win, stayed consistent and out of trouble. And then you had Newman, who basically stayed consistent and out of trouble with no win. So you, I think it's a, to me, it's a fair balance.
I will agree. Actually, I'm really starting to take back my feelings on the chase. I was basically 50-50 through the whole thing, but I really think it shows, it gives those drivers who every week showed consistency, in a sense, you know, the chance to win for a championship, go for a championship.
And then they still got a shot during the first 26 to get a win, to get in. If not, if they ran well enough and the guys that won the races to get in, you saw there were, what, four teams that didn't have a win that made the chase, and one of those has survived that. So it just rewards both the win factor,
right,
but emphasis on winning, and the consistency. When it used to be years ago, you ran for a championship. The wins, if they came, they came. As a matter of fact, the year Kenseth won his championship, he only had one win all year.
Right.
So now it makes it a little more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's gonna. It's definitely made for a good twist to NASCAR. And I read an article today, I think it was Fox Sports who put it out, regarding the chase and saying that NASCAR got this new chase format right. And, you know, after reading it, you know, I sort of agree. If you, I don't know if you're a fan of college football, Vince, but the chase format now is similar to the new college football format. And, you know, basically saying that, you know, even if you were the best of the best, you're not guaranteed in that championship, you know, just by winning games. It's all about consistency and talent and, you know, doing and just really fighting hard to get, not that all the drivers didn't just didn't fight hard to get in to this year's chase, but it was just a different type of fighting hard, I guess you could say. And that's, you know, I don't know. The article was real good, though, Fox. It kind of opened my eyes to, you know, see the side of where NASCAR was coming from when they decided to do it this way in the first place.
And plus, you know, you have people that are fans of certain drivers that got bumped out. They're a little upset. You have everybody talking about the sport now more because who did what, who's the a-hole for not for doing what he did. So everybody's talking about it more now, and now it comes down to, hey, you don't have Jimmy Johnson looking for number seven to tie Earnhardt and Petty. You got a couple of new guys. And out of the four teams, there's one team that doesn't have an owner's championship, where three of the others do. You have Gibbs that has one. You have Newman with Childress, who has several. Gibbs has several, too, because he won with Bobby Labonte, and I think he won one with Dale Jarrett. He won a few with Stewart. And you got Roger Penske with one who's looking for a second one, but he still got one. And then you have Stuart Haas, which is owned by Stuart, but he don't have an owner's championship. He's just got driver's championship. So this could bring him into that upper echelon of teams and, you know, a force to be reckoned with, when before it was just the Roushes and the Gibbs and the Penskes of the past couple of years. So, and it's amazing how it's Harvick, who went from Childress to Stewart, and he's right now looking like he's got the best shot because he's coming off the high of this week anyway, but he might not have the best shot going into Homestead. We'll have to look at that a little bit later on.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter who did what last year, even with Hamlin getting the win, there's four bloodthirsty guys there that are going to want it. And if any one of those four wins it, they got the championship. If it's somebody else, then people are going to be fighting for position. So, I don't know. I think I'm having fun with this one, this chase this year. I mean, even last year, it came down to the last couple races. Kenseth went into Phoenix, needing a good weekend to go into Homestead to finish it, and he didn't quite have it, so they put it all on the table at Homestead, and then Johnson ruled out. The year before that, it was Keselowski with Johnson battling it out until Johnson had a couple problems, and Brad was able to hold on, run good, and walk away with the trophy. But before that, when Johnson was winning five in a row, he pretty much had it locked up by the time the last couple races came.
Definitely bringing a new everything to NASCAR. I've even heard from a couple people who said I was not a NASCAR fan, but I kept hearing about all these fights and these brawls on pit road and, you know, this and that. So I decided to start watching, and now I actually really like it. And so that's interesting. I mean, I think that's kind of what the goal was, to maybe bring new fans into the sport, bring some old fans back to the sport, and give, you know, current fans a little twist in what they've been seeing every year.
That's for sure. Because one of my past guests who had spent a lot of time with NASCAR and some teams and all, Denny Darnell, he used to work for RJR PR when Winston sponsored the sport. And then he went, he was the Dodge rep when Ray Evernham came back in and started using Dodges again. And he's been around the block a few times, and he was saying that when NASCAR had that big boom and they started building all the tracks, building extra seats and running the prices up, they lost a lot of generations of fans because people couldn't take their kids because the prices were too high. And then when the economy went a little south, they still haven't come back down to earth with the prices, and people didn't have the money. So that's like a generation or two of fans that NASCAR lost and had to get back. And then when the racing kind of stagnated, you know, that didn't help matters either. So they had to do something. So I don't know if you've noticed ticket prices have come down a bit. Hotels have come down a bit because people that used to go to a couple of races a year and used to maybe go to your home track and go on vacation to another one or two, cut a lot of that out. And if they did go, it was only one and they couldn't bring the kids anyway because at $100 ticket, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, who can afford that these days? I mean, some can, but...
But, you know, that's why you start seeing a lot of empty seats. And now the way to get them back is they got to start regrowing generations of stars to come in to watch it. So it's they bring the prices down. They're offering packages. Kids get in free, all that, you know, or if they're under 12. You know, make it so if you have, you want to bring Nate to the race, you can get him into a ticket package and save you a ton of money.
Yeah, I was surprised. I don't know if you heard in the beginning of the broadcast on Sunday, they said that they had a sellout, so the grandstands were sold out, not a seat available. I was happy to hear that. I mean, I'm not sure. I wasn't really paying attention to how big their grandstands are compared to, you know, maybe another track. But hey, I mean, I think that was a good sign for NASCAR, because I've seen some races this year where the stands have been pretty empty.
Yeah, there's a lot of races where the stands are pretty empty. I did catch that. And you figure there's close to 100,000 seats there, if not more, but I figure about 100,000. And for that to be sold out, A, the prices were right, and B, it was an interesting race because of the drama that's happened throughout the chase of what was coming in and what was at stake going into Homestead. It's kind of basically kind of the same as the Richmond race going into the Chase. That's the if there's a race you want to go to, it's one of those critical ones.
Exactly. And I mean, and you know, well, I don't know if they could really call it an infield there, whatever it's called, but I mean, they look like they had lots of campers and it was full and packed. And, you know, that's a really good sign for NASCAR. I was really happy to hear that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if they can get them in there, I know like at Dover, you've been to Dover, you can't really, the only campers in the infield were the motor coaches for the drivers and of a couple series that used them. Then they had the truck garage. Did you go to, you went to what, a June race or an October race? When we
met. I've been to both. I think we met at the October race, though. Oh, no. It was June.
Okay. Well, that was, you know, you had the truck series. You had the Nationwide and you had the Cup Series. The big three were there, so. I mean, in the October race, it's the K&N East, which I don't think brings the luster of the truck race. But that's their homestead. So either a champ is crowned there for that one or it's close to it. You know, like Dover June, if it's not roasting out there, it's usually probably the hottest race of the year temperature-wise for the fans to sit in October. But late September, early October, it's a little cooler.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely cooler. Not to change the subject, but this has been eating at me. I wanted to ask you about this for like the last how many days? Not that many days, but still. But I couldn't wait for tonight to ask you your opinion on this whole Kurt Busch drama issue going on.
That's right. I think I did post a link up from the GTL page from when I saw it. Truthfully, if it's something that happened 6 weeks ago and it was that legit, they would have arrested him right then and there.
I agree. I'm baffled. I know that she, the girlfriend, I mean, for those that are listening at home, I guess Kurt's longtime girlfriend, Patricia Driscoll, or however you say her name, she's accusing him of assaulting her in the motor coach, grabbing her by her neck, I guess putting her head into the wall. I don't even know exactly what all it was. You know, she said he threatened that if he had a gun, he would kill himself. And she basically wants him to seek some help and just basically leave her alone. You know, now his attorney is coming back and saying he didn't do this. This is all a fabrication by her because she can't deal with the fact that they broke up. Whatever the case may be, 6 weeks ago, why was nothing done sooner? I mean, this is a serious, serious thing. This is domestic violence. This is a woman saying she was assaulted by a man who is extremely well known across everywhere, you know, in the sport of NASCAR and beyond that. So, okay, she comes back and says that it was because she's going through a custody battle with the father of her child, and so she needed to get through that and deal with that, and then she would be able to deal with this. I just feel as a woman that it's domestic violence. You know, it involves, your accusations involve something so serious. Why wait 6 weeks? You know, but I mean, I'm not her. I'm not in her situation, and no one is. I just really hope that, you know, answers are found and this is all resolved in one way, shape, or another, because if it is true, it's terrible. If it isn't true, it's terrible. So it's kind of, you know, either way, it's just a really bad thing. And it's a really bad thing for Kurt, because we all know Kurt doesn't exactly have the best reputation to begin with when it comes to his temper and his anger. I mean, he's called the outlaw for a reason, right, Vince?
That's right. I just brought the article up here. About 2 p.m. Wednesday. That's this week, not Wednesday of race weekend. It happened during race weekend where she said he smashed her head into the wall, I guess, of the motorhome. And there was a thing about her kids, I guess, from the previous gentleman, which caused in the custody battle, that she has filed court documents requesting Bush stay away from her and her son, Houston. But apparently the kid wanted to hang around with Kurt, and, you know, what kid, if Nate wanted to hang around with Brad K, you know, and you guys are involved, then, you know, that's what he looks up to.
Right, but exactly.
But Kurt's known for a bit of a temper.
Mm-hmm.
And wants him filed by a psychiatrist. But, you know, there's that old saying, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. If he was trying to break up with her, and, you know. And then there's the thing where it says he was verbally abusive to her. Well, you know, if you ever get into a fight with somebody, you get, where do you draw the line at verbally abusive? At the FUs or the,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean,
maybe throwing names at her or something. Start calling her names.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a fine line between verbal abuse and, okay, physical abuse is another thing. Now, if he's smacking her around and giving her, she's sporting black eyes, then, you know, or bruises and things like that, it's easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
Unless she's into rough sex or something, I don't know. But,
right.
That's a whole nother matter.
Yeah, we won't even get into that, right?
That's consensual domestic violence, I guess.
In the end, you hope it's consensual domestic violence.
That sounded dirty. In the end?
Yeah. No, but I mean, you know, back to this whole Kurt thing, I honestly, I'm not even kidding you. I really thought that these two were, you know, they were a great match. They showed lots of affection at the track. They made no, you know, they didn't hide anything about their relationship, that they were together, you know. I follow both of them on social media, posted pictures of each other, especially her son and Kurt. And it seemed as though possibly her and her son were doing a good job at kind of calming Kurt and maybe giving Kurt a little better of a reputation, per se, with all the work that he started to do with the veterans because of her. And, you know, just, I don't know, just give him a little bit of a better reputation amongst NASCAR fans and the sport itself. So this, to me, was a shock. And I think it was a shock to a lot of people because I saw a lot of people commenting saying they didn't even realize the two of them were broken up, and here they were broken up, you know, for a week or two before this even happened. So.
Yeah, see, that kind of lends credence to the fact that she's, you know, she was involved in his life, and now that she's out of it, she heads the foundation. So if she's, like, back to square one on the outs, you know, being that they weren't married or anything like that, she has no... She can't lay claim to alimony because they didn't have any kids together. But it's just when it happened and what they're trying to say. And so I kind of think, I did want to bring that up with you as well. And a good thing you brought that back because that was big news midweek. It's not like the... Everything going into the Phoenix race wasn't big enough that you always got to throw a curveball.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I was just saying to myself, you know, I apologize for saying this to all the Kurt Busch fans out there, but thankfully he wasn't in the chase because I feel if that would have happened to him as a chase driver, it would have really overshadowed the race at hand and the importance of it for a lot of the other drivers, I guess.
Well, he was in the chase. He was eliminated in week one.
Right. I'm saying...
When this happened, it's just that the fact that it came out now.
Yes. That's what I mean. Right. That's what I mean. That it would have taken... The eight drivers that went into Sunday still alive and still at that chance to be in the final four. I think if Kurt was one of them, it would have overshadowed the reason for the race and the importance of it and just how hard all those other drivers have worked. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sure. I mean, but I think that because Kurt, because the focus was on that this was a chase race and this was the yes and the no to four drivers and, you know, or I should say then, yeah, to the four drivers who didn't make it, I'm kind of glad that he wasn't a part of those drivers because it was a very serious matter and I think it would have just taken away media-wise from the story at hand, and that was those eight drivers who fought their way to being still standing in the chase.
Or was it a necessary diversion so that the four guys or the eight guys running for the four spots didn't have to worry about it too much because all the focus was on that and they were able to concentrate on things and prep for the race better?
True. True. I could see how that would be. The thing that shocked me, Vince, is, you know, I guess because she actually just even reported it to the police. It wasn't just that the police just released it. She literally just reported it to the police on Wednesday morning. They weren't even aware of what had happened until then, right?
Right. So it's like a day late and a dollar short type of thing. I mean, as I scanned down the article a little bit, where'd it go? It was saying that the kid, Houston, referred to Kurt as his stepdad. They were going for back and forth between Charlotte and Indy. They seemed like a happy couple then. You know, it was it's just so weird that, you know, I don't know what transpired. One, why did what made them break up at that particular time was the, you know, you don't hear anything about that. All you heard was he got verbally abusive and slammed her head into the wall and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and, you know, what comes about of the investigation. And I totally was in agreement, though, with NASCAR and, you know, with Mr. Haas and letting him race. It's a serious matter. They acknowledged it was a serious matter. But at that point in time, you know, Kurt hasn't been charged with anything, and this is basically accusations. There's no real proof, evidence at this point that has come about. So why keep him from racing? Do you agree with that?
Definitely. If he was arrested, then it might have been a different story and charged with something. Then, you know, NASCAR isn't known for not taking harsh penalties against anybody, except for maybe Harvick and the incident on last week where I think he should have got fined. But now this is all hearsay right now until somebody comes out with something. Of course, he's got an attorney said who, you know, they say he should be, you know, it's all hearsay and this, none of this is real, and he'll be vindicated for it. So, you know, so it's just a matter of, you know, what the woman, I mean, the Ms. Driscoll and him have that caused them to split apart. And, you know, nothing against women in the equal rights movement, but sometimes women have the upper hand in these things. And when you can play the domestic violence card, and chances are people are going to side with the woman because, you know, that's the way things are. And
yeah.
Most of the time, rightly so. I mean, there's some men out there that get abused by their women, but how good does it look if they run around crying that they were abused by their wives?
True. Then there's some men that, you know, are not afraid to admit that. But
until you see what they look like, and then if the woman's a bruiser looking and you get the skinny little guy, then you understand it.
Yeah, yeah, right. They don't want to lose their manhood to having something like that reported. But, I mean, the point is that I am anxious to, like, see, and I guess this is the reporter in me that kind of analyze things like this, is the part where she claims that after this happened, she ran to a nearby motor coach, and she needed an ice pack, and I'm not exactly sure all that she said. Well, I wonder whose motor coach that was. Like, was someone in there?
Good question. Was it Kyle's?
Yeah. Whose was it?
Whose motor coach? Good point. Because, you know, drivers and owners that have the motor coaches.
Right. I mean, does Kurt bring two? Did she have her own? I mean, I don't know. They were broken up, so I wouldn't see that happening. But, you know, so whose motor coach was that? So obviously that's someone's motor coach that she's claiming she ran to and needed an ice pack and, you know, so forth and so on. Well, whose was it? Maybe there's a witness or, you know, somebody that can say, hey, we were parked next to Kurt. We were, you know, we were two. She didn't come to our motor coach. She didn't come to our motor coach. I don't know, you know. Like I said, it's the reporter in me.
Yeah, that's true. And here's another thing for the reporter in you. You know, besides whose motor coach is it, why hadn't nobody else has come forward? If they were broken up, why were they together in the same motor coach?
Well, I was wondering the same thing, and I had read in one of the articles that he was apparently, according to her, sending her text messages that made her think that he was not in the right state of mind, and that she was going there to try and calm him down and help him and basically make sure that he didn't do anything stupid per se. And that's why she was there in the first place. And this was after qualifying at Dover, which I guess apparently, I don't remember, Kurt didn't do so well in qualifying. And she said he was distraught over their breakup and over that. I mean, who knows? That's why she's saying she came in the first place. So, okay, now she's there. And I'm pretty sure one of the articles I read also said that she was there and her son was with her. So now, you know, this is happening or this is taking place in front of this child or these accusations are being made falsely and involving this child. I mean, it's just all around a bad, bad thing.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, why, as a mother, would you bring your kid into a situation that's volatile with the non-father of the child?
Mm-hmm.
You're good.
I'm trying here. I have to say, on another note, that's what I miss the most about reporting every day. That I love kind of breaking things down and trying to figure it all out. That was something I really liked to do. I always wanted to be an investigative reporter and get to the bottom of
I mean, going back in the trenches and staying out of the newsroom.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I just found it. I was very into learning more about the case and the situation, and we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because I did want to bring it up with you, and you pulled it out at the right time. That was timely to bring this up because, you know, I don't know. There's a set of circumstances that just aren't matching up because you get to what she said. He's not commenting because, you know, his lawyer told him not to. Anything you say can cause you trouble.
Yeah.
And I don't hear anything about, you know, she's got to go through the Dover PD. And I commend them for keeping it under wraps as well, but I don't know how, you know, what wound up being the leak on this, but it sure seemed to come out of like, in the, you know, when it did come out midweek, and I kind of looked at it myself, and like you said, you know, I was like, well, why is it coming out now? I mean, yeah. Then you hear there's a gun involved.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. That's the thing. Oh, he beat me. Oh, he has a gun. And that's usually what gets the cops going. He's got a gun. Or if a woman calls in and says, my boyfriend's beating me. He's Kurt Busch, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we've all heard those 911 calls that they play on, you know, TMZ and all those shows. But, yeah, I'm just wondering if maybe this happened or something. They had some kind of a falling out in the motor coach. You know, she leaves, and then maybe a couple weeks go by, and she feels maybe they're going to get back together, so she doesn't want to run the risk or whatever the case may be. And then, you know, finally reality sets in. We're not going to be back together. I'm going to show him.
Right.
So, I don't know. I don't know this woman from, you know, I probably wouldn't know her if I fell over her. However, I'm not taking away from her character or saying that she's making it up, because, like we all know, Kurt does have a temper, has been known to have a temper. You know, I just hope in the end, the truth is revealed. And if Kurt really needs the help, he gets the help he needs. You know, if she, you know, doesn't want him to contact her, okay, great. They don't have any contact with each other. You know, it happened. Let's move on. But I think it's just a sad situation with that boy involved, because you could tell he really, really looked up to Kurt. I mean, he was called like the mini outlaw or the outlaw junior or something like that. They named him because he was always like at Kurt's side. So just sad.
Yeah. So Kurt treats the kid as basically like as his own, which is commendable, really, and God bless the woman for being able to find somebody like that. I mean, as a single mom, you know, finding somebody like that is a blessing, I would think.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I know there's more than what meets the eye. You know, we see the little boy with Kurt at the tracks, and, you know, yada, 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 whatever, you know, the times they spend together on social media, going fishing, whatever else they posted pictures of through the years. Yeah, and, you know, you really hope that's a great thing for a child, you know, that the parents aren't together, and especially a single mom trying to start over, find a guy who's going to not only accept her, but also accept her child and treat him as his own. And that seems to be what Kurt did. Like I said, there's more than meets the eye. We don't know everything. But I'm not sure, did you watch that documentary with Kurt Busch? It was the 36 hours or something, and it was all about the Daytona and the Indianapolis and how he was doing both in the same day, and he was training for both of them. And I guess she's the one who kind of initiated this to happen. She got the ball going to do this documentary on him, and actually it was very, very good documentary. I enjoyed it all. Obviously I'm a NASCAR fan though, but it was a good documentary, and they seem to be very compatible, very much in love, and you know, it's just sad all around. I really hope it works out for the best for everyone involved.
Yeah, I did. I thought I saw something or parts of it. Did they show? I guess they showed that between the two races. Is that when you saw it? Oh, between the Indy 500 and the Coke 600?
Well, actually, I think it aired after the two, because it actually documented him at the race at Indianapolis, then getting on the plane. He actually had to get an IV to get rehydrated.
That's right.
On the plane. Yeah, and then flew to Daytona, and then they featured the Daytona race in it, and how that all played out. So I think it actually aired after the races. It was great. It was a really good documentary.
Yeah, that's right. Because they did look like a happy couple. I mean, it says they've been together since 2011, and unless that's a different woman, because I could have swore they were together longer.
Well, didn't she kind of come into the picture right at the end of, like he was married and then she kind of showed up in the picture? I don't really know. I don't really follow Kurt Busch too much, but I think it had something to do with that.
Yeah, I have no idea, but because I always thought I know she was a blonde lady, and the person I always remember seeing him with was a blonde woman. So I kind of, not that all blondes look alike. I'm not being sexist here.
No, I know.
But, I as a little radio guy running around trying to get my driver interview more focused on the driver than the driver's partner, whether your wife or a girlfriend. So, half the time they're with them, the other half the time they're not. It all depends on where it's at. So, usually you see the driver walking from the hauler to the car to the hauler, at least at Dover anyway. Pocono seems like it might be a further walk from the hauler to the car where the garages are set up. But
right. Probably is a little longer.
And you
got to
dodge the crowds of people that are, like, you wonder how they got in the garage area.
Mhm. Yeah. I don't know. So much drama and headlines being made lately with NASCAR events.
What was that?
I said so much drama and headlines being made lately with the sport of NASCAR.
Yeah. Well, you figure you have the press parade that follows them week to week. So therefore, you got to figure out a way to get a story out of, whether it's a non-story or a sidebar story, because you could tell by some of the press conference questions that you know who the drivers are getting tired of answering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt.
So I always try to make sure that I listen. And if I don't give I make it a point to either set the tone, get the first question off, or get as close to the first question as I can, because after that, then I got to think up stuff to ask them, because everybody's asking them the same thing over and over, just putting their own twist on the question to get their answer so they could play it back on their show or the nightly news or whatever.
Yeah. At first, funny story to tell you about getting questions in, when I first started covering the Pocono races, how funny it was, I knew absolutely nothing about NASCAR. So my favorite question would always be, so I've heard this is not a great track to race on, and I've heard that a lot of drivers don't like it. How do you feel about Pocono Raceway? That's like my funny talking media and journalism.
Well, one of my first times covering, I had landed an interview with a young and up-and-coming Nationwide Series driver, who turned out to be Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Oh.
One-on-one. So I actually wrote questions. I had people help me with questions. My wife, who was a fan, helped me with questions. I thought up, she came up with five, I came up with five. So I got the tape somewhere. But I knew that once he hit the cup scene, that interview is never going to happen again. So that was one of my first one-on-ones to get him. And then it took me a couple tries to get it because when in 98 to go to Dover, we just asked for credentials. We didn't know the specifics that you had to ask for a credential for every little part of the track you wanted to get to.
Really?
Yeah. So we just put press credentials. Then I went to go in the media center, but I didn't have media center credentials, so I couldn't go in there. And then the girl told me, the PR girl, said, well, you know, just meet me at the hauler. And then I couldn't get in the garage because I didn't have the garage passes for the Nationwide. I think was it a Busch Series? I think it might have been the Busch Series still. I think it might have had a year or two to go there. And so I kind of called her up, you know, ran into her, you know, and then I just left. I was bummed. I couldn't get in there, couldn't get nowhere. So the next time I asked for pit pass, garage pass for the Cup, garage Nationwide, Victory Lane, everything I could think of, Turn 1 Media Center, because that's where they always brought the winners after the race, and the Media Center, and I said that once already, to parking, you know, I didn't know you needed a pass to go parking, so.
You
so I went back
asked
to
for it all.
So I went back to that for one, and so when I went for the next race, I didn't have the garage pass for the I did get the media center. I did get the parking.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, in the media center, I saw the lady, and I said, you know, I called her afterwards because Dover was a June Dover race. I was calling. I had gone to Charlotte because I went to Charlotte and then drove our way back before I got married. So we went to the Charlotte, the Coke 600, and then cruised through the. Took the long way around, went through the Cherokee Reservation, then through Gatlinburg, and then, you know, back home for a couple, like, week vacation, and Dover was the next weekend, which it still is. Last year they changed it around, but this year they put it back right after Charlotte. So went there, and I was bummed. I was made a call from the hotel room. You know what a call from the hotel room is before cell phones were what they are now, back in 98, $9 phone call from the hotel room to the PR girl, and you know, I thought I had everything set up, and I couldn't get in. I was like, darn. So I went home. I was like, no sense in me staying if I can't really get anything. Next race down, I was able to get, you know, called her back. We put her on the show. This is before I had my own. This is when I did another, co-hosted a all sports show. That's what kind of, the ball got started for me, and he wanted NASCAR coverage because in Philly we had WIP. That was the only sports station, and they did not touch motorsports whatsoever.
Oh, really?
Really, they still don't. The only time they'll go into it was when Earnhardt got killed, and they were calling to ban it, and it's a death sport. It's not really a sport, and they were trashing it left and right.
Huh. What's their beef with the sport? I wonder.
Well, they're stick and ball people, and they're hosted by stick and ball people, and then they took over YSP-FM, and now they're an FM sports station. Then WPEN, the station our parents used to listen to down here, they went all sports. I tried to get in there. They really didn't want to touch motorsports either. They wanted to go stick and ball, and they did. Then they wound up becoming an ESPN network after that because they couldn't make the local stuff work. I told their station manager, be like an ESPN. Go get the stuff that people want to listen to that the other guy won't touch. They didn't listen to me.
Right. Why wouldn't they listen to you, Vince? I would listen to you. I do listen to you.
You know, it's like when ESPN first came out, they didn't have baseball and football and basketball. They had volleyball, and then they got NASCAR and some of the weird sports, cricket and things like that. They just, whatever they could put on the air, a lot of it had a following. Nobody could find it, so they they built up their audience. Then they was able to said, like everything else, you could charge advertising dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Then they went after bigger fish. Now look at them. Everybody wanted to copy them. Whether it's Fox Sports or NBC Sports now, I mean, Comcast Sports. So, and after that, once I did get my Dale Jr. interview, and after that, I was, then I learned how to say, okay, if I want so-and-so driver, who to snuff out the PR people. Set up a one-on-one with so-and-so. And then when one time I saw was a guy from CN8. It was a Comcast network. It was a local channel for the cable. I don't know if they had the same channel up at Pocono. I don't see why they wouldn't at the time. They had their people down there. He goes, man, I got to get some interviews for this. I said, who do you want? There's a PR guy. Set it up with them. Tell them who you're with, blah, blah, blah. And I got them hooked up. They were able to get some interviews, and not a guy left CNA. He done left there, and but after going to Dover, you know, it just got to be a point to where depends on what you want. You got to know who to go to.
About who you know. Who to go to is right. That's totally right. Well, was a real quick question. Was Earnhardt just as shy then as he is now?
I almost didn't recognize him because he came walking into the garage area. He had the hat, baseball hat on backwards. He was all slumped over, and he walked right past me. Then I saw the PR girl and said, yeah, he'll be right out. Hold on. Then he came out, and away we went. Had my 10 questions. Took her back to the station. Got him to do a station ID, but it wasn't for this show. It was for another one, so I can't reuse it.
Well, that stinks.
Oh, yeah, and I used to get everybody to do one. Those that would do one, did them. Delio Castroneves, Sam Hornish, Bobby Labonte, Dale Jr., Jeff Gordon, all of them. That would be my last question. Would you be so kind to do an ID for me? I have it handwritten on a piece of paper.
He was probably, of course.
Joe Gibbs turned me down. Thought I was going to use
really?
It and cut it up and make him sound bad. And I'm saying, I'm just some poor slob on a local station looking to get some recognition. Ric Flair, I interviewed the old wrestler, Ric Flair, because he was a grand marshal of a nationwide race at Dover. Got him. He wasn't doing for me either. But I used to remember watching him in the military on TV and on a Saturday afternoon with my buds chugging beers. He'd go, woo! You know? God, I said, gotta get him.
Too funny. Now you just have to get new ones.
I gotta get to. Seems like everybody I interview, I ask whether it's. Like last time was, I got John Force to do one for me, and he kind of screwed it up. He goes, and I even played it as it was. He goes, I can't believe I'm doing this, I'm screwing it up. I says, that's the beauty of it, John. Just let her in.
That's funny. Keep doing it over and over. I remember having to do promos for the news, and honestly, the guys in my station would just basically keep it rolling. Because then they would use all my mess-ups for the blooper tape. And it actually turned out pretty funny, so.
I'd love to see that.
Oh, there's a whole blooper reel. 12 years worth of bloopers of Kristen. It's actually pretty comical.
Now, was this the other station, or?
Yeah, it was the other station I worked for 12 years, so. I think they gave it to me before I left. I might have it on a DVD. Wouldn't that be hilarious?
That sure would.
I'm going to have to see if I can locate it.
Yeah, so every time, I mean, as far as the interviews that go after that, I just kind of wing every interview I do, because if I'm in the press room, it's like, well, if I'm preparing questions and somebody asking the same thing, I can't ask it.
Mm-hmm.
like when Danica first showed up at Dover. So I said, well, how do you like driving on the concrete at the Monster Mile? And she goes, it's kind of dirty. She went into explaining, and she went into explaining how all the rubber came flying in and out. And she says, in an Indy car, you don't get that. It kind of makes the track stickier. But in the stock car, she come out looking, you know, with rubber and tar and oil all over and kind of grungy looking.
Mm-hmm.
But she's another one. She wouldn't come on the show as a call-in, so.
Yeah, you were saying that. Surprising. But, oh well, everyone has their, their own.
Maybe as a girl, you can get her. Maybe you, when you go to a race in for WILN, get your credentials or get your mic flag and all. People love to see that stick sometimes. Especially guys like Michael Waltrip or guys that love to talk.
Oh, I love Michael Waltrip. I told you, he was my favorite interview of all time.
Well, here's a funny story, too. I know we're getting long-winded here, but that's okay. We got time left. We can take this till 10 if we want. I was standing out of a hall. Michael Waltrip was driving the 7 car for, I forget who owned it at the time. And I was waiting for an interview with the guy in the hauler next to him. And Michael's like, you waiting to talk to me? Come on in. I'll tell you. Then I went in and interviewed Mike.
There you go.
That's before he became big time Mike Waltrip and drove for Dale Sr., won his first ever cup race, or the car owner. But yeah, good interview. Then I asked him to do an ID, and the show was called The Afternoon Rumble. So, hi, this is Mikey Waltrip, and you're listening to that. Afternoon Rumble. What's an Afternoon Rumble? That's just the name of the show. All right, hold on. They did it again.
Classic. That's awesome. He's just a funny guy. I like him.
Yeah, he's genuinely that way.
Yeah. Well, I like genuine people, so maybe I could sense that in him right away, but he seems like a good guy.
And Kenny Wallace is another one. Love to talk. One of the guy asked a question, chill 10 minutes.
No, I never had the privilege of talking to him, but.
At the time, I've gotten him when he was driving better cars all the way down to where he started driving crappier cars. One of the cars was the J. Robinson Racing. He was driving the Border Patrol car. I had serious Kenny Wallace. 20 minutes of him talking about the sport and how it's changing, though. And then the poor guy in front of me was local Dover station, radio station. He didn't have his tape on. He didn't have his mic hooked up. And Kenny goes, Wallace goes, you might want to turn that thing on there like that, you know.
Sometimes those who are interviewed know more about what needs to be done than the person doing it. You know, like they don't see the red light on the camera or this or that. They know because they've been interviewed so many times.
Yeah, you get the old pros. And the hard, you always get, there's some hard ones you don't want to get. Like I got Ricky Rudd. It was the first race back after 9/11. Everybody had their patriotic paint jobs on their cars, and Ricky was running good, and I said, well, I don't know if I'll be able to get to him. But they'll hit the right PR person. You had to have the right person for that week.
Mm-hmm.
Because the main PR person had off, who happened to be, who was Steve Post, who's now at MRN. So I was able to get the PR person, and we set it up, and I asked him all sorts of questions about racing and 9/11. You know, I had a lot of topics I could grab from, so it was good to get their take on getting back to racing after all that.
Right. I bet it. I remember how much heart and soul was put into events like races and sporting events and stuff like that after 9/11. It just showed how Americans just come together and keep on fighting.
It's one of those touchy subjects. You don't know how they're going to react and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's when the country always pulls together in time of crisis.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's say, Fida, see, you were, back then, you were what? You were fresh out of college, I think.
Mm-hmm. I was 22.
Yeah.
Young little reporter. Didn't know what hit me that day.
Green behind the ears.
Wow. I had no idea what I was in for that day. And I'll tell you what, it was probably the best challenge I could have been given at that time, because it challenged me to the point, you know, challenged me to a point I had never been challenged to before in terms of my job. And I think it really helped mold me as a reporter for the future. So, I mean, it was a day obviously no one will ever forget. It was terrible. I won't forget it as, obviously, as an American citizen. I'm also, you know, covering it for my job in the news. And speaking of, tomorrow's Veterans Day. My hat goes off to all the veterans out there.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I mean,
I am one,
but, you know.
Yeah, thank you for your service. I mean, tomorrow's a real special day for our country and for all the veterans like you.
Just think of it. When I was in, here's how the scenario went. My unit always gave us our birthday off, so I had my birthday off, the Marine Corps birthday off, which is today, the next day, and Veterans Day off, which is the day after.
Mm-hmm.
So my birthday on a Wednesday, I knew I had five straight days of nothing, of relaxation.
How about that? I'm jealous of that. You deserved it, though. You deserved it for serving our country.
Man, I feel a little deprived that I didn't get to go over and kill anybody, because that's a Marine's job, but...
Doesn't matter. You still took that oath and put that uniform on and got yourself into the Marine Corps, and I'm sure it wasn't easy. And so, yeah, you're still a hero in my book, Vince.
Aw, thanks. Well, anyway, let's talk about, speaking of... talk about the upcoming battle to the finale at Homestead.
Wowzers, I don't have a pick for that. I usually have my pick before I even come on the air. I don't have one this time, so I'm going to wing it.
Well, let's, before we get to make the quick pick, let's talk about the race a bit. And so we got a few things on the line here. New first-time winner, which is, I think we were texting back and forth, fresh blood, good for the sport, with Hamlin, Logano, Harvick, and Newman. It would be kind of ironic for if Newman won it, if he won the race and win the championship, because he hasn't had a win all year. And Hamlin, who runs well at Homestead, if you remember back when it was Hamlin, Harvick, and Johnson battling it out for one of the championships a few years back, Johnson was able to outlast Hamlin and Harvick because he had already been there, so he had the experience of the pressure situation. And Hamlin and Harvick kind of screwed their days up. Whether one had tires.
Mm-hmm.
So, Logano's never been in the situation, even though he has in a K&N championship prior to coming over to the Nationwide Series. Actually, it was more of the Cup Series because Stewart left at the time. We'll see who's kind of thrust into that. And Newman, who basically stayed consistent enough all year, didn't have a good enough car, I think, to get to where he had to go. Harvick seems to be the one who's had a consistent enough year as far as how well he's run, probably just had the finishes. So you think that it should be his to get. But I don't know. It's at this track, it's anybody's game.
I think it's anybody's. I think this week is, I think it's going to be anybody's race. I think it's anybody's chase at this point. I don't know. I don't know.
But you face it. I mean, you can't hang back in this one if you're one of the top four. So it's either going to be checkers or wreckers. You got to give it your all. So whether you make it to the finish or not, you have to give it your all. I mean, if I'm looking at the results of last year, Hamlin won the race, but Kenseth dominated the race, and he's not in the chase right now. He led seven times for 144 laps with a second place finish.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Johnson had to finish above a certain point, which he did. He wound up ninth, did not even lead a lap, and took home the trophy. I think what Kenseth needed to do was wreck Jimmy early, so he finished in the low, in the high 30s or low 40 or 40 or just above the start in Parker's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To ensure that championship, but he, you know, you're going to want to do that. He's running good. Why risk a chance? He started on the pole. Junior had a good run that week. Truex had a good run that week, but I can't count Truex because he went from Mikey Waltrip to where they had them poor. He got screwed basically because Waltrip with the shenanigans between trying to get him into the chase or not by, you know, calling Boyer to the pits or Vickers to the pits so Truex would have a better finish or something like that, or causing a caution. I forget how it all worked, though. That was a whole other debacle.
Yeah, it was. It was a complete debacle. I remember that. They were saying that, yeah, it was Truex and Boyer or something.
They kind of acted, and then they got screwed, and that's where Waltrip lost the Napa sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Napa sponsorship, how about Chase Elliott clinching the nationwide title?
Yeah, good for him. I knew he was going to be one to beat.
18 years old, girl. 18 years old.
Unbelievable. Wasn't he like...
I heard somebody, if you want to get an interview one-on-one, we'll try to get him now before...
Yeah. Well, wasn't he the one who was, I don't know, he was in school, like, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then he hit the track or something? I remember seeing something. It was him, right?
Yeah, it was him. He just graduated this past May. He graduated high school.
Yeah. It was last season that he was doing that.
Oh, it was this season.
Oh, was this? Oh, yeah. So he graduated in the beginning of the season last May.
Yeah, he was. His mom wanted to make sure he got his high school diploma, so he had to go to high school, and then head to the track, which is kind of hard for a nationwide guy because they race earlier.
Yeah.
If it was a Cup guy, don't race till Sunday. Nationwide, you get there what, the day early, and then you race on Saturday. So to go mm-hmm. through all that as a rookie and walk home with a championship, he's one of those guys you got to watch out. And from what I can gather, he's going to stay in the Nationwide series. They're not going to rush him up, which is a good thing.
That is a good thing. Keep him. I say keep him down there for a little while longer. Let him build up his skills and learn a little bit more and then bring him up. And it'll be, his name will be a little more well known. I think he'll have a little more, what's the word?
Respect.
Name, right? Yeah. And I think that then bring him up into NASCAR, you know, kind of like what they did with like a Brad and, you know, when they brought him up from Nationwide, they brought him from Nationwide up to Sprint Cup. Yeah, I think he'd be down for a little while.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you just saw they rushed up Logano. Who else was one of the guys rushed up? Reed Sorensen, I think. He was a guy I thought was going to do better.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing, Kyle Larson is one that I think they might have rushed up. I can't read Chip Ganassi's mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I did question him at the banquet one year. What the hell was he thinking when he signed? I was sitting at the table with where the rookie of the year was supposed to sit, and Chip Ganassi, his PR head, and Montoya was late, so he didn't get to the banquet on time. So smack dab next to me was Chip Ganassi, who did shake my hand, got a big Indianapolis 500 ring on. And we're sitting there eating and having the thing, and she's like, got to talking. I said, excuse me, can I ask you one question? He goes, sure, what? I said, David Stremme, what were you thinking? And he's getting like the fake knife and jabbing it in his chest. He goes, kill me, why hurts? I don't know.
Too funny.
That's when they had the banquet thing in New York.
Yeah, it used
had
to be in New York.
Media day up in, they used to have the Chasers at one venue, and then the Champions Luncheon at the 21 Club.
Mm-hmm.
You would enjoy that. You get
definitely.
The first year was at the ESPN Zone. I went to two because it was in 06 with Jimmy Johnson's first championship in 07. And now they run out to Vegas. It's a little bit expensive. But 06 and 07, it was Johnson's first two cups. And this was the second one. The first year they held it at the ESPN Zone, you stood in a line and the Chasers came down and you asked them questions along the way. The second one was at the Hard Rock. And they had
mm-hmm.
them all, they had the Chase guys sitting on stools and you went to them. I was able to interview Kurt Busch right there because nobody was going to Kurt. So I was able to interview him there. And got a good little one-on-one on that. Didn't ask him for an ID there, though. It was not the right
thing. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And then after that, I walked from there to the 21 Club. First year, I didn't know where the hell it was. And you ask a New Yorker where it's at. It's kind of weird. But, you know, you get that New York courtesy, you know.
I wish it was still in New York. That's right down the road in my book.
Yeah. Well, what happened was, here's how this all worked out. When I went back to WNJC, and as a sports director, one of the mm-hmm. guys used to write for the Philadelphia Inquirer. His name was Pete Schnetz. He goes, well, the NASCAR guy you want to talk to, gave me his name. It was Laz Benitez was the Eastern Regional PR manager.
Okay.
So I called him up. I says, well, I do a motorsports talk radio show in the Philly market, and I'm the only one. So anybody you could bring me, I'll be glad to put on. And that's what struck up that relationship. And then after that, it was, I'm going to send you this to go to here, and I suggest you go. All right. Get up at 3 o'clock.
Very cool.
Hop the train. Drive to Trenton. Hop the train into Port Authority. Then take the subway to the Times Square and then get wowed by the city.
Very cool. So, New York City is my favorite place.
It's a good place to visit. I wouldn't want to live there.
Nah, I don't think I would. Maybe when I was younger I would, but not now. Having beer as my neighbors. I'll take that.
Well, that's the dream job in news report and go to the network.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My goodness. I call it BN before Nathan. that would have been a dream of mine. It was a dream of mine. But that seems quickly when you're thrust into motherhood.
Ah, yes. So that's where I got that. And then the worst part about it, at the 21 Club, you're there with all those reporters. So I didn't, you know, I got to sit at the NASCAR guys' table instead of the first year where I sat with all the other reporters, the lower-level guys. But this year I was at the other house. Well, first you have the cocktail hour, which is not a good thing on your stomach, believe me. They just came out with Patron Silver, and I says, well, I never had it. Oh, here. So the guys that were serving the drinks would bring me one, and they were giving me, like, you get a 7-ounce juice glass, they would give me 3.5 ounces of tequila. Then they come and refill me about 3 or 4 times. I'm like, uh-oh.
Oh, boy, Vin.
At the end of everything, I said, I went to Laz. I said, I didn't embarrass myself, did I? He goes, oh, no, you did great. That's right.
Oh, boy.
I was hammered.
That's funny.
But, you know, it's one of them life experiences.
Of course. You gotta just take those with, you know, put them in the back of your head. And when you think back, at the time that they're happening, they might not be so funny. Or they might be fun. Maybe the day after, they might not be so funny. And then eventually, it's going to be funny again.
That's for sure. Good thing they had good food there, like filet mignon with some, you know, it's that fancy cuisine you see on the Food Network type of stuff.
Nice.
So,
well, I do wish it was still close by, so I could sneak my way there this year, but that's okay.
Yeah, when Laz left, they moved everything out to Vegas. NASCAR was cutting back on their budgets, and, you know, they cut down their PR staff. Because the head of the PR guy was Ramsey Post, and now he works for a private firm now, but not all those people there. They were good people. They took care of you. They treated you nice. But like any other business, you got to make cuts.
Yep.
So
things change.
So as we go into the last, it's gonna be different having to find stuff. So you said you were looking for a guest who had a function tonight. If they win the championship this weekend, he owes you. You make sure you go.
I told him that. Don't you worry. I told him that. You know what? I wasn't going to push it because I know it's probably a busy week for them, and we won't give it away. But, yeah, I told him. I said to this particular person, you win the championship this weekend, as in his team wins the championship this weekend, you owe me. Actually, I told him he owes me either way, Vince.
No, that's good. I guess I had a – when remember Dale Jr. won his first Daytona 500. Tony Stewart was the one drafting behind him for second place. Well, that Monday, I had Junior's gas man and Stewart's car chief on due to a friend of mine that I had met that I had brought on the show with me. And she was in tight with all the crew people, kind of like you are. But so she says, well, she offered him up. So she got him to call in and the other one to call in. Was Jeff Clark, who was Junior's gas man, who was actually Shauna Robinson's ex-husband at the time. And I was told not to mention anything about that. And Tony Stewart's car chief. And I can't remember his name, but the only reason why I remember Jeff Clark's name, because he was promoting his motorcycle business. I had him on again later. But I've never even mentioned that to Shauna, that I had him on the show, because I don't know. But apparently, since you said they're all friends and all, maybe I can bring that up now. But, if you get somebody who wins a championship like that, group person on, all the merrier. Have a good old time.
We'll keep our fingers crossed for that one.
So let's hope. So should we try to make a pick for the race or try to make a pick for the championship, or you want to do both?
I say... Let's do both.
Okay, we'll do both. You want to go first? Or you
yep.
want me to go first?
If you want me to. All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm going with Denny Hamlin for the championship.
Okay.
I don't know why. I just have a sense that he's going to pull it off. And I figured, as far as the race goes, I would ask Nate Dogg who his pick is. Nathan, who's going to win the race this week in Miami? Jeff Gordon, he picks. Can you believe this?
Okay, so you're going to go with Jeff Gordon for the win.
We're going to go with Jeff for the win at Miami and Denny for the championship.
All righty. I'm going to go with Harvick for the championship. And I'll take Kenseth for the win.
All right. See what happens. It's going to be interesting. I'm so excited. I look forward to every weekend. Just, you know, obviously it's the weekend, break from work, the whole deal. Man, these last few weekends have I been looking forward to Sunday. And this week's going to be no different.
See, the chase worked. Or is it doing the show on Monday?
It's both. I get to watch racing, and it's been very exciting and holding your attention a little bit more. And then Monday I get to talk to you. See, it all works out for me.
There you go. Don't worry if you see me text you during the race, like I have before. So.
Oh, yeah. We'll
touch the base and run some ideas by as far as what's going on and where. Alrighty then. So we have our decision 2014 for Garage Talk Live. This is it. Our final picks of the year. The lovely and talented Kristen Lee Buzinski picks Denny Hamlin to win the championship and Jeff Gordon to win the race. And yours truly goes with Kevin Harvick to win the championship and Matt Kenseth to pull out the win for the race.
Okay.
Anybody wants to make their pick, go to Facebook.com/GarageTalkLive or go to Garage Talk Live if you already like the page and have the picks posted. And you can all make your picks in the comment section. So,
yeah, go and make your picks. I want to see who people are picking too.
Yeah, don't hold back. Don't chicken out. What you got? Put your money where your mouth is, but we're not putting any money on it. We're just doing this for feel-good purposes.
Absolutely. And maybe the winner will have to buy the other beer sometime soon, Vince. How's that?
Well, you want me to mail it to you?
Well, I mean, whether it's, maybe we'll meet up at a race again or something.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right there, Kristen. Another good, fun, and exciting show tonight. It all comes to a head, and then the week after that, we'll be scrounging for guests and something to talk about. And we'll talk more about that next week, what the plan is for the off-season. You're welcome to stay with me because, again, it gets hard to talk about stuff that when there's no racing on, so we can dig up stuff and outside topics, whether it's some up-and-comers that want some airtime, or it's usually what I do is go to some of the local tracks there. One of our Facebook admins, Kyle, he usually feeds me fresh young drivers to interview. Usually they're ladies, but I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, you better not.
I like promoting the ladies because I don't think in NASCAR they get a fair enough shake.
Right.
So there you have it. Another good show. Let's say goodbye to everybody. I'm Vince. Your turn.
I'm Kristen. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see how this last race turns out on Monday night. Make sure you tune in.
Good night and good racing.